This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
Dean Beck and Tim Little with you on Hide and Seek. We've got a couple of guests coming up, Tim, tonight. We're going to be exploring what has happened 12 months on from the world's largest scientific and medical conference, AIDS 2014. 12 months on since that event, we will get to speak with two men who were very much involved with it.
Wonderful.
Brent Allen, the Executive Officer of Living Positive Victoria, joins us. Welcome.
Welcome.
And the man who was centre stage on that big last night, John Manwaring, welcome to you.
Oh, thank you.
Who is also a board member of the Victorian AIDS Council and I believe has a new job.
Yes, starting in a couple of weeks I will be working at Living Positive Victoria, working on their Senior Voices project.
We'll get to that right after this. I've got a very special surprise for you, John. And this is
grand.
Just for you on Hide and Seek.
Every day, those of us living with HIV have to contend with fear and the irrational, often cruel reactions it incites. These reactions take many forms, whether a senseless remark or something as serious as a law that enshrines hatred and perpetuates stigma. These laws, these seemingly insurmountable barriers, are devastating. They fly in the face of all the progress we as a community have worked and fought and died and died and died to achieve. When governments legitimize homophobia and transphobia, when they criminalize sex work and drug use, when they stifle the rights and voices of women and youth, when they take us, the marginalized segments of society, and try to suffocate us into non-existence, they promote fear. They promote hate. They put policy above humanity. They enable stigma to thrive. It's incredibly tempting to give in, to give up, to fall silent, and quietly hope that in time things might get better. But the people, the groups, the governments that oppress us, they want us to think we're powerless. That we should sit down, be quiet, and fall back into the shadows. But if the past has taught us anything, it is this. Silence equals death.
You can lift your man up, give him more than he wants. It don't mean a thing if you can't hold him down.
It's a very hard truth to accept, but we do need to speak up. We are more powerful than we know. Right here at this moment in this room is the power to change the world. It doesn't require any special skill or talent. It requires from us only one thing, honesty. A simple conversation, one that is open, fearless, and forthright, will change the hardest of hearts and the coldest of minds. When those of us living with HIV come out into the light and share our stories, we dispel the fear, the stigma, and the hate. In the eyes of those who oppose us and oppress us, when we talk to them, we're no longer stereotypes and statistics. We're human.
You can lift your man up, give him more than he wants. It don't mean a thing if you can't hold him down.
We're human.
You can take your man back, tell him all that you want. But let me tell you now, you gotta hold that sucker down.
So starting now, I urge each and every one of you, don't be scared anymore. Be yourself. Be proud. Share your story. It isn't up to governments and NGOs to fix this for us. This is our cause. This is our time. And together we will put an end to HIV. We will put an end to HIV.
Hide and Seek, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. I'm Dean Beck, he's Tim Little.
Hello.
And they're our guests, Brent Allen and John Manwaring.
Welcome.
Brent, let's have a look at what's happened in the last 12 months of the HIV sector since AIDS 2014 left town. You've clearly had a holiday and put your heels up and been taking it easy ever since.
Absolutely. I reckoned it was just going to slow down for me. I was going to cruise on through everything. Didn't really happen.
We've achieved a few things since AIDS 2014 that were brought up about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one certainly that's getting the most media play recently would be the repeal of Section 19A. This is a fundamentally important thing for people living with HIV, obviously most directly in Victoria, but these sort of repeals of law, first of all, this is very rare. You know, legislators do not repeal laws. They love to make them, and they love to amend them, but they generally don't repeal them. Mm. So this is a fundamental win, and it has a cascade effect. This is already being talked about in other parts of the world. It's used as a reference point for why other arcane laws need to be removed.
So is this just in Victoria?
Yeah, so this was the only criminal law criminalizing HIV in all of Australia, actually.
Wow.
So having it removed means that we're criminal law free.
We're in line with the rest of the other states of the nation.
Definitely.
There are many countries around the world that have got all sorts of laws specific to HIV. How is this going to influence some of the United States? John has also got some rather backward laws regarding HIV. How is this going to be seen as a case study and used as an example?
Well, in the same way we used case studies from the United States, the same way that we used case studies from European countries when we were putting forward the argument around how, for example, these laws do damage to public health, how they dissuade people from testing for HIV, and how they affect the lives of people living with HIV who are afraid to disclose, which does nothing for protecting people during sex.
Mm. John, you referenced it in your speech. Mm. It's great to see it happen within the 12 months. It was promised within the 12 months afterwards.
Remarkable, really.
What are your thoughts?
I'm encouraged, but as much as I want to be an optimist, I'm also not. I'm a bit of a realist when it comes to these things. And
why are you being so bloody miserable?
Sorry, I'm a dick like that.
Do you need a hug as well?
Always. Cuddles are great. No, it's that. Well, it's encouraging to see it happen somewhere like this and bring Victoria in line with the rest of Australia. The fact is, in the places where HIV is even greater problem than Australia, in the US, for example, those laws are not matching up. So one state might have a highly progressive regime and another one have a highly regressive regime. Mm. And granted, any step that isolates those states that are regressive and basically names them and shames them is a good step. But the fact is, it's something underlying that. It's not just HIV that they're scared of. There is something fundamental that I think is untapped that needs to be addressed before progress is going to be made, not only in respect of HIV, but a whole host of queer issues.
Do you think campaigns like Ending HIV Stigma have been helpful in this cause? Because I know countries like Argentina, where gay marriage is actually legal, there's really, really high stigma around. And here we have these great campaigns like Ending HIV Stigma, whereas other countries aren't so fortunate.
Yeah, I think they're remarkable campaigns. Like, part of me wants to say, do more, show more, be more aggressive. But I realize that can also have the opposite effect.
Sure.
But anything that brings attention to it, anything that keeps a conversation going, no matter how low level it is something that's helpful. Because, like we said, when we don't talk about these things, they just turn into pond scum. They just sit there and ruin everything.
Absolutely.
Brent Helen, the Enough campaign was something that kind of evolved out of very little and still has very little behind it other than a lot of community buy-in.
Yeah.
How is it and what is its future? Because it really did have a purposeful life's end at AIDS 2014, but it seems to continue.
Yeah, so I remember coming on your show, 2012, before going to Washington and explaining how we were going to be doing a soft launch of the campaign in Washington. Some of the parameters of the campaign being that it couldn't be funded by public dollars because we weren't going to be pressured into editing the contributions from those who had experienced stigma. We wanted to use the voices of people who were experiencing that. So 2 years on at the conference, it certainly was very visible. And now we have over 60 worldwide ambassadors, Nobel Prize winners, ministers from different countries, yourself.
Radio
announcers. And we have, I'm glad to say we've gotten a few letters recently because of the repeal of Section 19A from parliamentarians who want to join as Enough ambassadors.
Wow.
So, the campaign, which we thought we would be ending by this time, continues to have a life. It's been taking off now in Canada and in New Zealand. They're branding their own Enough campaigns. It's really fortunate to see that. Yeah, it's a great thing. We have nearly 4,000 signatures to the pledge around ending HIV stigma. And this is all done without absolutely no funding other than community funding.
Hmm. Wow.
And it's future life?
Well, I can say that it is going to be the major recipient of the forthcoming Winter Days dance party. And we'll be announcing a couple of new ambassadors, including one of the DJs, Alex Taylor from Sydney, who will be joining the ambassadorial team.
You'll be announcing that now?
I just announced it, didn't I? And there's a couple of other performers who are going to be performing that night who've approached the producers to say, look, we'd like to do something more than just perform. We want to actually make a statement about HIV stigma.
Wow. Good stuff.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Your thoughts, John, on the Enough campaign, because, you've kind of seen it unfold and been a part, I guess, of its gestation with your work.
Mm.
What are your thoughts on it?
I love it, but I'm also just like, do more.
Right.
This is something where I would say be more aggressive. Granted, we're obviously limited by funding, we're limited by reach, but I think people... We talk about it within our community to a degree. We talk about it within the broader HIV community to a degree. But what reach does that have in communities beyond that?
Hmm.
What reach does that have in respect of somebody on an app trying to hook up, somebody in a bar having a conversation? Really, what's the substantive effect of that? And that's why I would love to see something that is more aggressive, that is more... in your face without being confrontational necessarily, but really gets people thinking about how they feel about these things. There are some remarkable ads about the use of the word, my apologies to anybody who's offended by it, but the word like faggot or gay in the US as a pejorative, that are really clever and they're really insightful about how they portray it. I think something like that says like using the word clean in reference to people's HIV status.
Things like we're all clean, like that campaign.
Yeah, like, well, I shower. Yes, I do. Thank you.
I did douche. Hello. Work it out.
Well, you guys will be you'll love to hear then the new aspect of the campaign that's been sort of talked about in the office mostly through the current campaign.
Don't be a douche.
Don't be a douche.
It's
not called Don't Be a Douche. But it's actually going to be based on an anti-bullying strategy that's in commonplace. And the campaign is called Name It, Claim It, Stop It.
Mm.
And it gives you a three-step strategy when you're faced with someone being rude, someone saying something that you find offensive, to name it, to claim it as your own and saying something like, when you say that sort of stuff, it makes me feel bad, and then ask them to stop it. And if you want to still hang around with me, you got to stop saying stuff like that. And you really personalize it and you take it back to the person. It's a strategy that's been used in bullying, for in schoolyards, taught to kids all over the world. And so what we're trying to do is adapt it to HIV stigma and give people the language, like John's saying, to say, you know what, it's not okay to use words like that while I'm you're around me, and I'd really like you to stop it.
It's a really important part to the ongoing success of the campaign, because what it actually does is give you the tools to make the point of difference.
Yeah.
I mean, signing the pledge was one of those ways. Being able to commit to not continuing the perpetuation of stigma, another really important message. But the simplicity of this is just beautiful. It's great.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yay. I'm excited. Hooray.
Oh, we need more of that.
We do.
Now, we're going to talk about a number of things that are coming up within, I guess, the total community, including things particularly relevant to those who are living with HIV. But one thing that has been and gone is the HIV Hep C forum that took place. Brent, what can you tell us about that space? Because it's something that I've had done quite a bit of work on air about, but it kind of went under the radar for some time. You know, there was a number of people that were contracting hepatitis C that were HIV positive. What's come out of the recent forum?
So the forum is actually on the 24th of June. So it hasn't actually taken place yet. Taken place yet.
I'm ahead of myself.
You are ahead of yourself, Dahl. But it is going to be a forum specifically for people who want to understand what are some of the issues around Hep C transmission. For lots of guys, especially guys who are HIV positive, you do need to be Hep C aware. You need to understand how Hep C is transmitted. It's not just through needle use. And it's important that if you want to be a healthy, sexually active gay man, that you know what you're doing. So the forum is really directed towards gay men who want to have that knowledge. And I want to carry on the stigma work. I have to say that lots of HIV positive gay men are quite stigmatizing against others who have hepatitis C. And that's something that's got to stop.
And why is that?
Well, it's this sense that, you know, maybe I don't want the double barrel whammy.
Oh, okay.
You know, but you find it's a bit ironic, really, because these would be the same people who say, I don't like being stigmatized because I have HIV. Well, you know, when you see things like on a profile that says, I'm Hep C free, you be too, that's not really necessary.
This is particularly important to HIV positive people. For what reason?
They do have, certainly for some HIV positive people who participate in certain forms of sexual activity, like long sex play, certain forms of sexual activity, if they PMP, there is a greater likelihood that you may end up, because of your heavy play sessions, attracting or contracting, Hep C as well as HIV.
Is there also a stigma in the community that Hep C is transmitted by blood-to-blood only rather than during sexual intercourse?
Absolutely, absolutely. I contracted Hep C, it had to have been through sex. When I contracted Hep C, I had never injected drugs. I had had a tattoo, but it was from a pretty reputable place. Any risk I would have had would have been through unprotected sex with other HIV-positive guys.
Sure.
You are with Tim Little and Dean Beck. Our guests are the Executive Officer of Living Positive Victoria, Brent Allen, and John Manwaring, Board Member of the Victorian AIDS Council. Am I allowed to say that, John?
Oh, I suppose.
Okay. And he does lots of other fabulous things as well. This is Hide and Seek on Joy.
Hide and Seek. Joy 94.9.
You're with Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. I'm Tim Little and Dean Beck on the other side. And we're joined by John and Brent. And we're laughing too much here in the studio.
Now, John Manwaring, you are a wonderful man. That little grab earlier that I mixed together, ladies and gentlemen, that spent half my afternoon on.
Well done.
Was just to highlight how wonderful John's speech at the end of AIDS 2014 was.
Thank you.
Are you off to Durban next year?
I certainly hope so. That was my first AIDS conference and I was in the midst of a breakup, so I was a little bit... my loyalties were divided at the moment, at the time.
Right, right.
So yes, I do hope to go to South Africa.
Very good, very good. What can we expect in the next 12 months, do you think, for this little old nation, for this little old state.
Oh,
following on from where we were, you know, when we opened the show as to 12 months on from AIDS 2014.
Suppose call me bringer of doom. I'm a bit terrified, actually, because there are things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that look like they're about to come into effect that are severely going to affect drug prices, the ability of people to import PrEP. There, you know, there's a process that has to be going, has to be accorded with in order to get it on
but
the
PBS. But we're told this is such a wonderful thing. It's open trade and, you know, it means that we can get so many other things from other nations
Big load of horseshit.
What does it mean? How does it work?
Yeah. So basically, it's a nice little free trade agreement between, among, I think it's 17 nations around the Pacific Ocean, U.S. chief among them, U.S. and China, really. And so everybody else is a kind of a bit player when it comes down to it. But it's having an effect in terms of patents, in terms of tariffs, in terms of all these things. So say Australia decided that they wanted to renegotiate drug prices for antiretrovirals on the PBS. Can't do it. There would be a set amount. Private companies could actually take the country of Australia, the sovereign nation, to court if they dared try and negotiate these drug prices.
Interesting thing to see, Truvada has already been rejigged and on the market in the US under the new version of Truvada, making the old patent no longer relevant and a brand new patent put around the drug.
Yeah.
This doesn't stand well for the likes of PrEP going on to the public pharmaceutical benefit scheme here.
Yep. Well observed. And this is a severe problem that has existed with the FDA in the US for decades. That they've been able to say, I think it's 7 years that they have a patent. I might be wrong on that. And then it expires. They don't have to do much of anything. They don't actually do anything significantly different to the drug. They just have to say, oh, we're slightly adjusting this polymer in how we manufacture it. So now it's a totally new drug. It's Truvada XL, you know, for lack of a better acronym. And it's a totally new drug. So let's keep charging $1,200 a month in the US. I think down here it's $760 out of pocket if it's not on the PBS.
Brent, not a good look.
Not a good look at all. No, I think John's nailed it. I think that's going to be a big issue in the next little while. You know, bringing things a little bit closer to home, I think that there are still some major things we have to do in terms of righting some wrongs legislatively. I think the fact that you still, if you're HIV positive, can't be a sex worker in this state, where, you know, you can go to our neighboring states and it's just fine. Like, that sort of inequity has got to be resolved pretty soon. I think that there are also problems with how we teach young people. There is no set curriculum around sexual health, and it's not mandatory. It's not comprehensive. It doesn't cover everything that everybody needs to know about. And I think that needs to be rectified sooner rather than later.
Your office issued a media release today regarding pharmacies and how we access medication. Tell us a little bit about this.
So what's gonna happen is, as of July 1st, if you're HIV positive, you can request that your drugs, you don't have to go to what's called a level 5 or 6 pharmacy, which are usually located in hospitals. So it is difficult if you live out of town. It's expensive. And so instead,
there's a lot of frigging around too.
It's a lot of frigging around. Yeah. So, and we know how important it is for people to adhere to their HIV medications. So we do want to remove the barriers as much as we can. And so community pharmacy is going to come into play.
Which just means your local pharmacy, doesn't it?
It just means your local pharmacy.
Okay.
I mean, you do need to talk to the pharmacist about them carrying your drug so that you can get it there. It's not going to be like they'll have like a whole stockpile of everything.
And we're not talking about, I mean, HIV drugs, there are many, and so it's a tailored regime to each individual. They're not going to, and they're very expensive, so they're not going to have stockpiles of
every single one of them. And there's lots of different combinations. So what it's going to mean is that you'll need to set up a bit of a relationship with your pharmacist, your local pharmacist, but which ones you want. But I also want to see things like mail order. You know, if like myself, live out of town, an hour and a half out of town, it's not a big deal for me because I work in the city. But for my partner, you know, it means he has to travel 3 hours just to get his meds. You know, why can't he just get the mailbox to us? And, you know, he only has to see his doctor twice a year now. He's so, you know, doing so well.
Yeah.
I mean, why should he have to travel in to get his meds?
Mm. And would it mean that you can just ring up your corner pharmacist and say, I want to, in 10 days, come and pick up this product of which I've got 4 repeats? Can you organise it that way?
The organisation really does need to be done by your local chemist. If you're the only person doing it, I think that there's that sort of arrangement needs to be. But we also need to talk about other chemists in sort of high prevalent areas where there's lots of HIV positive who may be going to them. People who are HIV positive, such as, say, Paran or in Collingwood mm-hmm. or something. And the relationship may be a bit different or a bit more streamlined.
Mm. It baffles me, and I'm no big fan of the U.S. on a good day, and but I'm absolutely stunned at how backwards Australia is in so many practices, considering how much progress they've made in terms of fighting the disease and in terms of treating the disease. The fact that rapid testing is only now coming into the country.
Don't get me started.
I know, it's a whole fucking Pandora's box, but it really baffles me. Why? Why has it taken so long, and why are we only licensing one rapid test when there, I believe, 9 that you can choose from? But also, when I was getting my HIV meds in the US, I had to go to the doctor every 3 months, fair enough, but they said re-upped and they were automatically shipped to my house. Mm-hmm. I didn't have mm-hmm. to lift a finger and they just showed up in the mail.
And there's the home tests, right?
Yeah, they're home tests as well. Again, that's another lovely Trans-Pacific Partnership casualty. We will now have one home test licensed in the country instead of 3.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous that they're not actually standing up for
this. And they'll probably be, what, prescribed rather than just available from your pharmacist?
We can't speak to that yet.
Yeah, we don't know. It's
how ridiculous. You've got to get a prescription to get a bloody saliva test or something. Yeah,
what absolutely baffles me is Australia doesn't realize the privileged position it has in terms of its economic purchasing power when it comes to these things.
We keep getting told that we're such a small player that we're almost irrelevant.
Bullshit. You have 25,000 people nationwide who are living with HIV. I think something like 80% of those people are treated for HIV. That is 20,000 people, each of whom is on a regime that costs tens of thousands of dollars a year, which is a huge profit for a pharmaceutical company, no matter how big or small. So, if you're going to say that that is not significant purchasing power, you're full of it.
Well, and you know, it's difficult.
It's the argument we get thrown at us all the time.
We do, and you know, but the thing is, they say it's not great purchasing power against something like the U.S.
Yeah.
Or something like South Africa, or something like the United Kingdom. But you're right, in and of itself, because there's a lot of other purchases that'll go along these things, and these things are never traded on single stances, and those trans-purchasing arrangements include a whole bunch of drugs. Statins, they're going to include antidepressants, anti-anxieties, lots and lots of medications can be wrapped up in this.
Joy 94.9.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. John Manwaring and Brent Allen are with Dean Beck and Tim Little.
Hello.
Now, a couple of things are closing down. Not the least of which is something that should have been closed down at least 5 to 7 years ago, and that is the CAN office in regional Victoria. Brent Allen, this has been one of the biggest wastes of money that our government has managed to spend in regional Victoria, and it is a great thing that this absolute boil on the HIV sector has been lanced. My opinion.
and you know, I think that has been well and truly shared with your listeners this evening, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'll happily do it to the health department as well.
Yeah, so it looks like CAN is going to be shut down. Their funding will be redirected somewhere else. We don't know a lot about what's going to happen. There is some rumor that their services that they currently offer will be tendered, so people can, like ourselves or the Victorian AIDS Council or someone else, Family Planning, can tender and continue the work. I think
you mean actually do some work,
or the work that they're funded to do. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah,
and I think that would be really good for the community in rural and regional Victoria.
I think anything would be really good for the community if it was actually done.
Yeah. So as we know, you know, if you're young and queer and you're living outside the city, it's really tough to get services. It's tough to find a safe, supportive space. And I think we would all really welcome an expanded array of services into regional Victoria.
John, you're a board member of an organisation that works in this sector. Mm. How is it that we can keep these organisations and their boards to account as a community? Because the governments don't give a shit. All they want is a tick in the box that the money's been spent. And clearly, in CAN's case, it was spent, God knows where and how. But government didn't give a crap as to where it went because they would have noticed that nothing was happening if they did. So how do we keep organisations to account and get value for money in this space? Because it's really important.
Join as members and vote. It's simple as that. It sounds overly simple, but it's true. When you don't have people who are actively participating in what is a community organization and paying attention to what those organizations are doing, you end up getting ineffective boards, you end up getting underskilled boards, you end up getting boards that are risk-averse and hesitant to do anything that's going to piss off their funders. And that's terrifying, especially in this era right now where everything's being consolidated and being put to tender and nobody knows what their future
is
going to be.
Well, what's terrifying is that governments are finally realizing that their money is being wasted, but it's taken them a decade.
I don't know that they so much see it as being wasted as saying, like, hey, this is how we can save money. I still don't think they give a shit. I think they are doing better about keeping up appearances, though.
Well, I would just like to see some things done and perhaps a few risks taken where actually outcomes were the result.
I think the risk needs to come, it does need to come to some degree from the organizations, but that's limited because if you think about the decisions they have to make, they're not only making decisions for the organization and for what their work is, they're making decisions for their staff. If they get defunded 2 years down the line, those people are out of work. No, the risk needs to be taken by the government.
But hang on. These organisations are set up to serve a community. Why is their primary purpose to service staff and their existence?
Well, they shouldn't be, but the community doesn't really care very much.
Well,
quite
that's
frankly,
true.
The community doesn't pay attention.
Yeah, I agree.
They want to be seen as doing a good job and you know, they want to be seen as supporting something that looks good on paper. But then when it comes to actually the nitty-gritty and making sure, it's like, well, how did the board members vote? What was that decision? Why are you making that decision?
And there's Crickets. A part of, I agree with John. You know, I think that there's got to be more accountability to publicly funded agencies. You know, I think that it's incumbent upon, if you're using public money, then you need to be transparent. Where are you spending the money? What are you doing? And how are you holding yourself accountable? I mean, I'm a big fan of participatory action in community service agencies, and that means getting the punters involved. So I agree with John that become a member and vote. But more than that, where are the opportunities inside your organization for the clients to make a difference, to have a say? If all it is that they go to an AGM once a year and get to put up their hand, that's not enough.
I totally agree. But that's about inviting them in to participate and actually engaging with them to be a part of your organization.
Absolutely.
And theoretically, you should have, I don't know, 10 times more people involved than you have signed up members.
Absolutely. And it should be a criteria of your funding. So what are your participatory structures? Name them and what they are. How are they working? How are you auditing? What's your evaluation strategy? You know, there are, we are the only organization in Australia, Living Positive Victoria, that publishes its business plan on its website every year. We've done it for the last 4 years and we're the only agency that continues to do it.
Why would other organizations fear doing
that? Because then they get held accountable. Then you have to say up front, this is what I'm going to do. And if you say that, then you got to deliver.
Oh, that old chestnut. Tim.
Oh, dear.
Got me started.
No, I'm loving it.
Keep going.
My thing has been the community just doesn't police its community organisations. We have this lovely model that sounds great for community by community, and government stands away from that and says, we'll fund it for community by community. But in that space, who's doing the police work? Who's making sure that what's happening should
Where's
be
the
happening?
Ethics? What are the ethics about you making sure that you're spending your money and saying what you're going to be doing? Are you delivering what you said you're going to be doing? If you're not delivering what you said you're going to be doing, then take the bloody money away from them.
It's almost like they're just ticking a box and going, yep, that's been funded.
Absolutely.
Well, from government's end, they just want to know that it's been spent because from their end, their job's been done, if that's the case.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Another thing that's closed down, something that was called Connect Line. Now, I remember these little stickers that used to go on things all around promoting Connect Line. What was Connect Line and why is this essential service being closed down?
Yeah. So Connect Line's been operating for years and years. It's the sexual health line. And it used to be really important. You know, from what I understand, years ago got lots and lots of hundreds of calls every month. And this was before the advent of the internet. But I'd have to say, you know, so we've had the service at Living Positive Victoria for the past 4 years. We used to do it in partnership with the Victorian AIDS Council, but we've just been running it ourselves. We're lucky if we get maybe, you know, 5-6 calls a week. None of them are from the GLBTI community, which is what the service was meant to service.
Where are they coming from?
Our most common caller, and he's a lovely gentleman with an accent, is very concerned about what he does when he visits
Sorry.
Brothels.
Oh.
He is heterosexual, and there's nothing wrong with that, but he's a very worried well kind of fella. And so we don't
is
get a lot of calls. He's very lonely. He definitely likes to talk much longer if you happen to be female and answering the connect line, then if you happen to be male.
Oh,
but
dear.
He's very charming and he's very nice.
No doubt.
But no, the service has definitely seen the end of days. Most people go online to get their information now. Certainly there are places that continue to offer services for people who want to call them. Melbourne Sexual Health, for example. And there are still some essential hotline services that need to happen, such as for post-exposure prophylaxis.
Yep.
So we will continue to have a recorded message and tell people, you know, where they can go to get real live, like right now, information. But I'd have to say we don't get a lot of calls.
Basically. Are there other similar services that are out there aside from the PEP hotline?
Helping the straight men and their doorknobs?
Yeah. Yeah. There are lots of telephone lines that service lots of different communities. There's one, I'm not sure if the gay and bisexual men line still operates. There's one for hepatitis C. There's lots of different lines.
So how much money were we talking that, and will that money be funneled back into the sector?
So we've been slowly, well, we've noticed the decline for years, but we've been in discussions with our funder about, you know, showing them the evaluation reports, the number of calls, the nature of the discussions, and we keep saying to them, look, you know, so progressively over the last 2 years, I'd say we've been slowly, you know, just saying we really don't need to spend what was originally $150,000 on a Connect line that's only servicing a very small number of people, and they've allowed us to transfer the funding to other services that we feel are more of a priority, and so they are very much in line and understanding that this is really something that needs to come to an end.
Hide and seek.
Now, John Manwaring and yes, Brent Allen are with us. There is a crystal meth awareness forum being held next Monday. John Manwaring. Put on by VAC and Living Positive Victoria.
Yes.
Right, you're helpful. And
Brent, I'm not entirely Brent, sure what you want me to say.
Brent Allen, what can you tell us about it and why should we be going?
Yeah, so the forum is really to continue to have the discussion with our community about crystal meth and what's going on in terms of its use. There's been some recent research reports that are showing that crystal meth use is going up amongst gay men living with HIV, including higher number of people who are choosing to inject. And there are lots of risks associated with that. There's so much going on about ICE at the moment in the community. God, it's just ubiquitous. It's everywhere. We recently put in a submission to the ICE task force where we really challenged them about their ads, the shocking nature of their ads, and said, you know, where's the harm reduction advice happening around here? Because there's nothing. It's either if you use, you're a demon. If you start using, you'll end up on the streets. And there's nothing in between.
On that note, it's on at 6 p.m. this coming Monday. Where is it being held? Hares and Hyenas, isn't it? Or is it? Check out Living Positive Victoria's website, which is
livingpositivevictoria.org.au.
Brent Allen, thank you very much for joining us on the show this evening. You are wonderful.
Thank
John
Manwaring,
I'm so pleased to have had two of my favourite men in the studio tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Bless. Thank you.
Tim Little, you've managed to survive an entire hour. Relatively unscathed. I hope you continue to join the madness that is this show for a long, long time to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hideandseek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au. Hide and Seek is presented by Andrew the Apprentice, James Findlay and Avi Miller. Post-production by David Cheshire.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.